I'm Brian Myers.
I'm Mike Ritalik.
I'm Becky Haddad.
And this is Ow Pellets, a podcast featuring tips for ag teachers. We are your agricultural education resource across the web, sharing research-based tips and tackling the tough questions facing agriculture teachers every day.
Hey, Ow Pellets, welcome back to session number 8 of our mini-series here on mentoring. This is Brian here with Becky and Mike. We are by the Ow Pellet, and we have had a series of conversations around this topic of mentoring that's been pretty cool. I will have to say it has been a pretty cool discussion. We were just talking here before we started recording that if somebody listens to all 8 of these sessions, we should probably send you like a certificate suitable for framing and posting on your refrigerator. Probably have like the 3 of our fake pictures on the certificate. I can see it hanging there.
And we can have Becky's dad sign all the certificates.
That would be fantastic. That would be great. So we're going to wrap this thing up. This is the final series or final session of the series about recommendations that come out of this report when we talk about these sort of things. So Becky, get us going again on this conversation, or as we talk about the recommendations around mentoring.
Yeah, I think in our last conversation there was tensions maybe a little strong. I mean, tension's always high around these two, but you know, I think a little bit of this, how do we separate the individual relationship from the organizational approach or program? And what are we really looking at? What are we measuring? And I think the report, we haven't talked about this piece a ton, of how the report is kind of structured to kind of move us from how do we define mentorship on this individual level to really how do we think more broadly about how we implement mentoring programs and how we think about what's actually happening as we try to help establish some of those mentoring relationships or help that along. Because I think, Brian, you mentioned the last conversation, the parallels to teaching, you know, when it comes to how do we make this happen? Like it can be a really long process. We were just talking with one of my classes about how long it can really take you to learn something. Well, similar with mentoring, it can take a long time to develop a relationship, and it's often time that we don't have. And so I think when we talk about these recommendations, they really get a little bit more to how do we think about helping mentoring along. And I think that's an important framing piece, because we're moving out of just this, what does this relationship look like? And how do we do this on the individual level, where our early conversations, this series, really let us kind of think about individually, how do we think about that mentoring relationship? When we get to the recommendations, we're thinking a lot more about what's happening organizationally to kind of give it a little nudge. Couldn't see my hands. There was a nudge.
nudging was occurring. Excellent. Well, and so the first of these recommendations talks about adopting an organizational definition for mentorship. So I think, you know, Mike made some great comments there in some of our earlier podcasts talking about laying these kinds of things, the idea of purpose. And I think that's what this one's getting at. It's just making sure that you adopt. And that requires several things. It requires, one, having a clear purpose. But to get there, you've had a conversation with at least leaders in your organization or leaders of this program to have an agreed upon goal.
Yeah, I think for me, it means intentionality as well. So that purpose, but also being intentional about how we set this up, how we organize it, how we reward it, and how we evaluate it. There's all kinds of elements and pieces that we need to think about instead of just saying, hey, we have a mentorship program. We're going to match people up and just turn them loose, and we'll see you at the end of the year.
Yeah, we don't need to go, like, I won't read the definition again. You can go back to episodes 1 and 2 to hear the definition yet again if you hadn't heard enough of it. But I think what you two really call out is just that effective, like, that highlights how much effective mentorship requires skill and support. And that is, it is a skill that can be learned. Obviously, there are some who are just naturally very great, like naturally good listeners, naturally good mentors, none in present company, but...
I thought she was setting us up there, Mike. I thought she was.
She was.
Are just natural.
I was. Just, gonna, yeah, just not the way you, like, thought I was.
Undercut. Wow.
I think some of that is also recognizing in adopting this definition, it's also thinking about what skills are we trying to help our mentors develop, not just how are we going to serve our mentees, but in defining mentorship, it also starts to help us think about what skills do we need to look for or develop in the folks who are mentoring through this program.
And I think that is a great segue into the second recommendation of using evidence-based approach to supporting mentorship. Some people may think they have these natural abilities, and some people probably do, but these are things that can be learned. I mean, there is science in this, and we need to focus on this, and which tells us that you can learn this. But you don't just need to say, well, I think that's what we should be doing. There's research and science out there that provides evidence on how to design these programs.
And along with the science, there's also best practices, and there's documents and guidelines and tools out there that people can use. And so you don't have to go back and recreate the wheel yourselves. There's probably things out there that you can beg, borrow, steal, adapt for your own needs.
And even apart from some of the more personal skills, even thinking about just the skill of entering the structure of a relationship. And we talked about that in the fifth installment of this series, but just kind of thinking about how do we help people enter mentor? Like, how do we think about entering mentoring as a skill? How do we think about balancing trust and actually using those tools? I think so often we think about, well, here's the tool. Like, we provide the tool. We don't always do the best job of like, here's how you actually like, use the, here's how you use, like, here's a hammer. Cool. Thanks for the hammer. Now what?
Well, and again, once again, I think it's a great segue to the third recommendation is establishing and using structured feedback systems to improve. And so with that, when you're using those tools, well, give me the feedback back that you're like, I've got these tools. I don't know how to use them. Or we have this tool that we're not, I don't think we're using it correctly. I don't think we're getting out of what we need. Or maybe I don't need a hammer this time. Maybe what I actually need is a wrench, you know, that sort of thing, the different tool.
Well, and those structures and systems are kind of put in place to really solidify and provide some intentionality. And so many times, we've talked about it previously on these segments as well, but having a structure in place so that we know that we're accomplishing what we set out to accomplish in the first place. And these structures certainly would help in that way.
I think even thinking about those in terms of just being proactive with our feedback, like, let's be clear, I know how to use a hammer, but if I didn't,
sometimes you should be using a screwdriver instead of a hammer.
Right. Well, you may not know you have the wrong tool. You might get the tool and think, I know how to use this, and just go to work using it, be using it upside down or backwards. You might have the wrong tool and not even know to ask for a different, like, this is the tool I've got to use it. I've got to figure out how to make it work. I think there can be a lot of this, like, surely there's something wrong with me if this tool isn't working. So I think when we think about those established feedback, I think that established piece is really critical, because it's not just, I have a feedback system and like, I have this loose feedback system in place, but I have really been intentional, kind of to Mike's point, of thinking about where are the places going to be that people will go, oh shoot, what do I do with this? Or like, how do I know this isn't working? Have I then asked questions that help me say, oh yeah, that's not working the way it was designed or intended?
One thing Mike brought up in the last recording as well, last episode, about we need to be ongoing. We need to have intermediate feedback along the way as well as at the end, and not just wait until, okay, we're going to launch at the first of the school year. Everybody come back at the annual ACT Teacher Conference at the end of the year. And like, oh my gosh, 74% of you are gone. What just happened? You know, right. We got to have this feedback along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the fourth recommendation out of the book says recognize and respond to identities. That's going to be important too for each of us. And again, that's one that's going to require some thought and some intentionality, but also, as we talked about before, some preparation for those that are both mentoring and the ones that are receiving the mentoring, so they can really understand where each person kind of is coming from.
Well, I think when we talked about identities, we talked about recognizing my own assumptions and kind of rethinking support. And I think some of that kind of back to the feedback piece of, where am I getting out of my own head on this to be able to say, what do you need, not what have I needed in the past? To be able to think, you know, my experience isn't everyone's, my access isn't everyone's. So how do I have those mechanisms in place to step back and be responsive in the first place?
Well, and I think, too, it goes to the organization or the system that you're in, and thinking of taking a step back and how does this mentoring program, how are the things that we're communicating really align with the values and the structures of the organization? And does it support and carry on kind of who we want to be and those kind of things as well?
Well, I think it also goes back, we kind of talk about this a lot, is that need for a team of mentors, because each person's going to kind of recognize a different identity and connect with that. I mean, there's something that, you know, if you're teaching in an urban area, you could probably mentor somebody that teaches in a rural area in a lot of different aspects. But some ways, there'd be some gaps there. And I'm sure, you know, female to female teachers need mentoring in there too, but there's can also be other mentors as well that you can still provide these things, but there's still going to be gaps in there, but none of us are going to be a 100% match on here, completely 100% understand everybody else's identity. So again, you got to have this team to understand there and build it up with the best you can.
Yeah.
Well, I think that really connect, like that really helps spread that responsibility as well. Like one person can't be everything, but it does put like, I think we've talked so far a lot about kind of that mentor and the program that they're a part of, but there's throughout this, there's responsibility on the mentee as well. Like this is a two-way responsible relationship as far as, you know, how do I recognize these things? How do I think about my mentor network more broadly than just kind of relying on this one person? And that's a great check for me to say, oh man, I am really counting on this person to be everything. And maybe not totally fair.
Yeah. Well, and I think your comments there, Becky, really start to talk about this next recommendation, which is supporting multiple mentorship structures.
Yeah, we got to have a bunch of different ways to go through here, because I think we talked about here, not only is it multiple mentors, I think, and you know, where this gets me going too is the way those mentorships are going to be, I guess, be structured, be formulated, and built are going to be different. Because I can think of in my own case, there's times that I wanted a one-on-one relationship with this person. There's times that I needed a relationship where I talked to this person every 6 weeks is all that I needed. And other times where it was kind of this kind of a group session where it might have been some peer mentoring that was going on for three, four, five of us in the same step that we got to talk back and forth to each other. And I know we talked about this earlier in the series. We think there's just kind of this power dynamic or hierarchy, but sometimes it can be this peer-to-peer mentorship, which is also very valuable. And I think that's what I see here as well, is you need to have that to where, you know, you have someone with maybe some more experience or that hierarchical type of thing, but there is this value of having a group of peers that you can talk with and share ideas with as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that has probably been a theme through a lot of our conversations is this whole idea of mentorship is multidimensional. And so it's not a one size fits all. It's not a kind of a one and done, whether it's individual or group mentorship. There has to be structures, and this has to look much more dynamic than what maybe some of us think about at times when it comes to mentoring.
And I'll be honest, looking at this list, here was the one, the next recommendation was the one that I was like, I don't know what to do with it. It talks about, and I need mentoring from my wise colleagues on here, rewarding effective mentorship. And where I'm going with it is I am all in on rewarding people for good stuff. But I think rewarding effective mentorship is challenging for a couple reasons. Is how do you measure effective? And then what is this reward? Because yeah. I'll stop there because I'm like into hard stop. What do we do with that? Because we don't give them money, or, you know, do you get a plaque? I don't know what you do with that.
It gets into how sticky our assessment conversation was. Like, is it at the relationship level? Is it at the program level in terms of the outcome? Like, and it's one thing, the report, like there's not a special chapter on rewarding effective mentoring. Like in general, the things we've talked about so far in this episode got their own specific day in the report, like they got their highlighted thing. Rewards did not. We are speculating completely. I mean, maybe not completely, but there's not necessarily a guide in the report to say, here's this reward, or here's completely what this effectiveness looks like.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge is that the rewarding process and system and award system that we have is probably going to be unique to the settings that we're talking about. So I don't know that we can solve that problem or even answer that question on a in a conversation much like this. But I think the challenge is for those that are working in with mentoring programs and involved with that is that you do have to think about how you award, recognize, acknowledge the work and the effort and the contribution that people have added to their profession or added to this mentoring experience because of the of what they've done. And so building that awareness, knowing that we got to recognize that and challenging those of us that those that are listening and involved in those programs, I think is the big recommendation here.
Well, I think not falling into this trap of relying on mentoring being its own reward.
Yeah.
I think we fall in, you know, like because it does feel good. Like it feels good to be somebody's mentor. It feels like those things feel good when you're developing people. And I think often, you know, the temptation can be, well, that's the reward. You've done this thing. You've done it well. That's great. But I think it is really challenging us. Like Mike said, it's not just this. It's not just recognition. It's really how are we really honoring that effective mentorship.
Right.
And I think so much of that is it does have to be intrinsic. You don't want to have, you know, you're not going to say. And probably because we're in the middle of student teaching folks right now. So I'm thinking of student teachers. And we recognize people that, you know, it becomes a count. How many student teachers you've hosted? That's great. That's a great way to do it. I don't ever think we should get to a point where we're like, okay, fill out this application and we're going to give you a banner for being the best mentor. You know?
I have room in my office for one more banner. That's what I want.
That's what you want.
I can see Mike's wall. There's plenty more room on that wall.
he has like those drawers are just filled with them. He doesn't put them up on his wall.
Valid. It's not so much the wall space. It's the drawers, yeah. The storage space for all the banners in Mike's office.
But I think that's one thing, I guess, as ag teachers, we need to make sure that we need to recognize something. It becomes an award. And y'all call me. I don't think that's what this report's calling for. I don't think that's where we're going. A lot of it's going to be this informal, but also this recognition of thanking people for serving as mentors. But then also making sure those of us that have been mentored by someone, we tell them the impact that they've made in our lives and our careers. Heartfelt. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It could be just a conversation. I think that's important as well. From the larger organizational mentoring, I think it's important to be thinking about who you're picking as your mentors. Because if you're going to have a statewide ag teacher program and you're going to have a formalized deal where you're going to say, I'm going to put this early career teacher with this mentor teacher, make sure you're picking your mentor teachers with intentionality and understanding what you're saying and what you're not saying when you pick this person to be a mentor, when you're not picking somebody else to be a mentor. That you are portraying a message there in recognition.
And I think even along those same lines, I heard another thread of things that we've talked about before with the reward also isn't just getting more mentees. Great, you're doing a great job. Here, have five, like, add more travel time, add more this, add more. Like, I think that it's also that recognition of how do I acknowledge that this is that great things are happening. How do I honor that while also recognizing that not everybody can have that mentor? And that's a bummer, and that's a reality of us being limited that way. But we need to be also, I think it's worth mentioning to be careful about saying your reward is to do more of this.
Perfect translation and transition because
I'm killing the segues today. I am killing the segues.
The final recommendation, mitigate negative mentorship experiences.
Does that mean that it's not all roses and lollipops and sunshine and unicorns?
Yes. Let me just say yes.
You know, we've certainly spent a great deal of our time thinking about all of the benefits and how we design and develop and evaluate or assess mentoring, and I think we all could agree the value and the richness that mentoring has on individuals and on organizations. But we do need to at least take a step back and think pretty intentional about how do we not mess this up and how do we not have negative things happen, and we can all think about how things can go wrong. So being intentional about addressing those proactively is probably something we need to think about.
I think, you know, proactively from the, how do you make sure they don't happen, but also how do you make sure you've acknowledged that they happen when they do? Because that helps address it proactively. But it also, like, if you think about the folks in your state who've had a negative experience with a mentoring program that's offered, they're not quiet about it.
Right.
And that's not to say the mitigation is to go shut anybody up. But I think there's a lot of power in acknowledging, hey, this maybe didn't go quite as planned. Maybe this isn't like the best representation of our program. This is where we're trying to fix something. That goes a really long way in mitigating how people perceive the overall, even the overall phenomenon of mentoring.
Well, and it's the idea we talked about before. Some really great, outstanding teachers do not make good mentors. And so you find that along the way. And the other thing to come find out, you may have somebody who's been a great mentor for a number of years and life happens. You know, they've had, for whatever reason, maybe they're not able to travel or make the time or the investment to do whatever else. Or two people that are in this relationship just don't jee-haw. And so that happens. And how are you going to be able to work these things out? I think with this too is also putting the mindset into whoever's coordinating the program and working with folks in a mentoring role. I heard this from one of our other folks here at Florida who got it from somewhere. I can't remember where she got it. Christy Shirelli shared with me. People and relationships are inefficient, but they're not ineffective. And I think that's the thing to remember, that building this relationship and mentoring is not an efficient process. It's not a do these seven things in 20 minutes or less, and you're going to have the person mentored. But even though it is not efficient, it is still effective when done right. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to do here by putting into these seven recommendations, following through with all of this mini series that we've been doing here on mentoring.
Well, a couple things that the book actually, or this report, talks a little bit about too, if we're thinking more of a kind of an organizational mentorship program, is having, you know, just being intentional, having a third party, independent party that can negotiate some of the conflict that takes place. And so it's, you know, no one's taking sides, they're hearing both sides, and they try to resolve some of those issues. So, you know, we're all colleagues. We all have to kind of continue to work and collaborate together as we move forward. So thinking a little bit about that. And then also thinking a little bit about regularly or periodic programmatic reviews. And so when do we take a step back and think about, you know, what are we doing through this mentoring program? Are we accomplishing what we set out to do? And how can we tweak and kind of continuously improve it?
Which does really hit on, I think, the recommendation for it's not necessarily in the formalized recommendations, but in kind of the summary, they're talking about this necessity for institutional change. And it's not just, I think we've talked a fair amount about the kind of how we measure the mentor-mentee relationship, how we look at these recommendations in terms of programs, but ultimately thinking about how do we engage those that we're trying to serve through fostering these relationships as change agents to consider the relevance of what we're doing, because they're the ones who are most directly involved with what we're trying to facilitate.
Well, y'all, this has been fantastic. I really appreciate us having this conversation, this little miniseries around mentoring, because it's one of those things that we kind of think we know is important, but we really don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about. And unfortunately, we go through, we develop programs, kind of think, hey, we need to have one of these, and we just kind of throw them together. So hopefully those that are responsible for planning these programs or in these programs or even your own individual mentoring, you found this mini series to be helpful as you're trying to develop those relationships, but also as you're trying to pour into other folks in the profession. Becky, I know it pains me to say nice things about you, especially where you can hear it, other people can hear it.
Don't say it. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
No, I really appreciate you leading us through this conversation. It's been great. You've definitely carried the water on this one. And so, you know, again, y'all check this out, go back and see the work here and, read the report, look over those things, engage on social media with each other to learn from each other about what you found, the good, the bad, the ugly of both mentoring programs, but also one-on-one mentoring. So, y'all go out there and invest in each other. And so for Mike and Becky, this is Brian here by the Owl Pellet. Thank you all for joining us for another episode of Owl Pellet's Tips for Ag Teachers podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Owl Pellets. Check out our website for more information on this topic and to learn more about our guests. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to stay connected. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you'll never miss an episode. For Mike and Becky, this is Brian here by the Owl Pellets saying thank you, and we look forward to seeing you again on another episode of Owl Pellets, Tips for Ag Teachers.